one, welcome all, step right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 137, coming at you right now. Howdy everybody, Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, and it's a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can jump on Facebook, check out The Portal, or on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Hello, everybody. I am your host for this episode, The Brant. And you can probably hear that I'm in my car for this episode. So bear with me a little bit as I jump through these things. This is going to be a straight review episode is the plan here. I've been playing a whole bunch lately, and I want to get reviews and things out there. And whatnot, and even some hot takes on some games I just got a chance to play last night. So, hope you're going well. Hope everything is good. It is a beautiful fall here in New England. And man, if you've never been to New England in the fall, you've got to go. There's a reason this place is famous. So, yeah, so I've done that. I've done the pumpkin patch stuff, and I didn't actually get to do a corn maze yet. I'm going to do some apple picking soon. VonnerCon is coming up, so that should be really exciting. A whole bunch of gaming that I'll get in. So, yeah, really looking forward to the fall and all those things. So, hope everything's going well with you. I know there's a lot going on at the store. Brian's super busy. And Kathy feels awful because now she just got sick again after trying to do an episode being sick again. So we're going to get more people on here, I promise. But I figure when we're covering reviews, and that's what we've got coming out of Gen Con, works pretty well. So I'm going to jump in here. I'm going to kick this off with a game called Shikoku. This is a game from the Grand Gamers Guild, and I got a copy of this at Gen Con. When I was given the game, I was told, that this was a game, the guy said, I don't really like a lot of racing games, but this one is good, so you've got to try it out. So I said I would. And I kind of think the same thing. Like, I'm not sure I'm big on racing games. I do like Downforce a lot, and I'm sure there's some others that people told me and whatnot. But I was like, let me give this a try. So Shikoku plays, I believe, 3 to 8 players. And the idea is you're walking along this path. And I apologize. I think it's Japanese, but I don't remember which Asian culture the game is. And I don't have games in front of me right now, so I'm not trying to be disrespectful in any way. But the idea is like it's like a path of enlightenment that you walk. And you want to walk it, you don't want to walk it quickly enough that you don't actually get enlightened, so you're trying to go slower, but you don't want to be so slow that you didn't actually complete your task. And so in the game, what you're trying to do is you're trying to be in second place or in second to last place out of however many players there are. So I get a chance to play this with 8 people, which is the full count, and it's really interesting. So you pass out all these numbered cards. And it's something like 1 to 30. I think there might be a number missing, or we set one aside. Anyway, so you have a hand of cards, and then every player is going to play a card and put their meeple out on the card, and that's going to end up being the order that you play for that turn. So whoever has the lowest number will go first, highest number will go last. And then on your card, you move up however many spaces it says on the card. Typically 1 to 3 spaces. You're going to move up the path that far. Or there's some that were more. There might have been more than 3 spaces even. But anyway. But the trick is, once all the cards are laid out, the second card and the second to last card get flipped face down, and anybody on those cards doesn't move. Then the front card goes to the end of the line, and the player on that card either drafts a card that's not in the game currently, or you eventually start removing cards so there's an exact number, or they're the first one to... So they'll be the last one to pick in the next round. So players will then start to get different numbers. And you go through and you move your cards off there, and then you draft... Sorry, that was a little confusing. Then you would move your meep... you have your meeples on a card. You play to a row below that. I'm sorry, I missed that in the explanation. And you would move your meeple down to the lower row and then draft from the cards that are remaining, going in that order. So you replace your hand. And you keep going through, and you play through... I'm trying to remember if it's a number of rounds or if there's a trigger. I think it's... Oh, yeah, there's a trigger. When one player finishes or multiple players get to the end of the path, that will trigger the end of the round, and then whoever's in second or in second to last... I keep wanting to say second and seventh. because I had 8 players, those players will be the winners. So what's really interesting is there can be ties, and there's a whole bunch of tiebreakers of who's where and what steps. They've got it all figured out, so really well done. I did enjoy the game. It's really interesting. You're making choices. You definitely get to a random frustration point at times where you realize, wow, I'm in dead last, and I just can't get cards, and people are going to keep taking my cards out. You're trying to plan to keep those players who are winning, but winning is weird in this game. And I think it's that weirdness that I really like. It makes it a racing game, but it just tilts it on its head so much that it was interesting. It's kind of like a party game as well, and I think it suits that purpose really well. So I've got this one ready to go for VonnerCon. I'm excited to teach people there because I think it's kind of perfect for that. It's gateway-ish, but I think there's enough thought to what you're doing. I'd be intrigued. Like I said, I have the one play. But I'd be intrigued to see where I was after, you know, 4, 5, 6 plays in terms of, you know, what made sense and what was where. And, oh, I can see this kind of layer of thinking about what to do in the game. But, yeah, it's definitely really unique. It's definitely a little hidden gem. So I would check out Shikoku from Grand Gamers Guild. It's a racing game for people who don't like racing games. That's kind of the way I would put it. Awesome. Next up, I got to play 2 very popular games that just came out last night. So it is a single play on each of these as well. But I definitely want to give you my thoughts and if they change that go. But I don't think so. I think both of these games, I can tell you what I think off of that play. Yeah. So here we go. The first one is Irish Gauge. This is a winsome game, but it's been republished by Capstone Games. So originally it was a 2014 Winsome game. So Winsome are these almost print-on-demand or print-and-play. I guess not really print-and-play, they're more print-on-demand. Train games that you can get. And they release so many in a year, and they print them all, and then they're out. And Capstone has now started this Iron Rails series where they are republishing these and reproducing them. And the game is gorgeous. So it's a train game. It's very akin. I mean, Ticket to Ride would be somewhat what you would think of as the most popular one. To me, it reminds me of Paris Connection, which I know has a different name, and I can't think of what it is off the top of my head. But Paris Connection is the Queen Games version. So Irish Gauge combines kind of the route building with the stock and auction mechanism, but it's definitely in a really nice package. In terms of that, it's gorgeous. It's lots of greens, obviously, for Ireland. They've got a hexagon map of Ireland with various cities. So what you're doing in this game is you're trying to get the most money, the most British pounds, at the end of the game. And in order to do that, you'll get the money you collect from your train routes, plus you will get any stocks that you own. So the game starts with a few trains and several towns on the map, and then cities. So cities are specified by these dividend cubes that you draw out of a bag and you place them randomly on the city, and there's 3 colors, black, pink, and white. And a town goes to a city as soon as it has a dividend, which means it can pay out money if you have a train route and be connected to a city in order to do that. Because people want to go from cities to towns and vice versa by train. So at the start of the game, you auction off one of each of the companies. And so there's 5 different companies represented by colors, blue, yellow, pink, purple, orange, I believe, were the colors in the game. And you auction off those. And they have a minimum value, and they have a certain number of stocks. So I don't remember which one, but blue or something starts at £4, and it has 4 different stocks. And they increase, so it might be 4, 8, 12, 16, something like that. They're not all perfectly linear in their approach. And so you're auctioning those off. Somebody can pick to auction one, and everybody just goes around. As soon as you pass your route, you can keep raising, and then you pay your money. You start the game with £20. So all 5 of those are going to get auctioned off. I guess I didn't say yellow, so somewhere there's a yellow, if I didn't say yellow. Because yellow goes first. So then on your turn, you have 4 options. You can lay track, which is add additional trains to spaces, and you basically get build points instead of paying money. So you get 3 build points. It costs 1 to go in a space. Unless it's difficult terrain, it costs 2. Or if there's another train there, it costs 1.5. So you could just place in 2 spots where there's other trains. It's kind of the idea. The other option is, ooh, I feel like there's 4 options, and I feel like I'm forgetting one. But you can turn a town into a city. Oh, you can only build trains if you own stock in that company. You can turn a town into a city by drawing, by placing a dividend cube. So you actually keep them outside the bag and you pick what you want. Okay, this one will now have this color. Or you can call for dividends. Oh, I remembered the fourth one. So actually, I'll back up before I do call for dividends. The fourth one is you can auction off a stock. And you can auction off any stock, not just one you have, because otherwise you would have control. So you can call for an auction, and the auction happens as normal, and whoever wins it gets it. So that'll be important when we get to dividends. So then you can call for dividends. When you call for dividends, you put the cubes in the bag, you draw three out. Any colors that get drawn, now if I draw three white, white just triggers once. But any colors that get drawn, you place them on the board, those are now out of the game. And any trains that have a route connected to a city, remember cities have dividend colors in them, trigger. And they'll pay out to their shares. So in order to do that, you have to have a train connected to a city that's connected to another town or another city. So it has to have some connection. And then you will count all the cities with those dividends, and they count 4 pounds each, and all the towns count 2 pounds each. So if I draw a black and a pink cube, but blue has a white city, that one will not pay out, but the rest of the train route will pay out. So any towns or other things they're connected to. It could be zero if it's only connected to, well, I forgot my colors because I have bad short-term memory, but the color I said in terms of all that. So you total that up, and then you divide it by the number of shares that are out. So if it was 10 pounds and there were 2 shares out, each player would get 5 pounds. Really what you want those share the money for in the beginning is obviously it's victory points, but it's also your ability to buy other shares. So if I have more money than other players and I can purchase a share, I could just auction a share and buy it outright. So that's kind of the idea, and then I can get control. And you start working with other players in terms of what you're doing. That's it. That's the game. The dividend part's a little confusing, and a couple of the rules need some added, but it's honestly pretty simple. It's definitely a step up from Paris Connection in terms of that. But yeah, it's a solid game. I read the rules for this and watched a couple reviews and playthroughs as well. Joel Eddy and Heavy Cardboard are the ones that jump into my mind, just to give them a shout out. And was pretty ready to play this and got a chance to play it. Mason taught me last night, and it was phenomenal. The game is so good. It's just the type of interaction I want. It's just the type of calculation. It's probably a little heavy on math calculation. It's probably its heaviest non-gateway part, is figuring out like what do players have and what's their potential and all that. And that math comes very natural to me, so that doesn't really feel like a barrier. It just feels like an element to me. It sounds super prideful or haughty, but I mean, I teach math for a living, so it's something I'm used to doing in terms of all that. So anyway, yeah, I just really like the game. I can see this being a staple. I can see this coming out because, boy, I mean, I guess it says an hour on the box, and I don't feel like we played an hour. It does have a point, I think, where players know I can't win. It's very tough, but you're just kind of calling for dividends. I didn't actually tell you when it ends. It ends when all the dividend cubes are gone, so you keep drawing. So once I realized I had a lead, I did win the other night, I kept drawing for dividends. Mason made a nice comeback. Brian, as Mason put it, was a worse version of me. He had the same stocks as me, but less. So it was tough for him to find a buy at that point in terms of what was going on. So I was able to just keep calling for dividends and making just slightly more, and I think I won by 4 pounds in the end. So definitely lots of good choices. You can see the end kind of wind down, but that's okay. I think it's okay that 30, 35 minutes in, you're like, oop, this is not going to go in my favor. I mean, it was short. It was interesting. The interaction. It's real straightforward. I could see people flopping a little bit on the money and how to purchase things and what values things. I think it's really well, Mason mentioned this, it's really good to think about like your pounds as victory points. So the money you have, you're giving up victory points. So basically, if you total that, you know your victory points and go from there. So that could be super helpful. But that is Irish Gauge from Capstone Games. It's an excellent game. One of the really good ones from this year. I'm not sure that I would throw it in a top 10 category, but definitely a top 25 game. And it's a nice bridge. People like to call that next step. It's definitely next step. Play Paris Connection or Ticket to Ride with people. Throw this game at them. You know, let them fight through the money a little bit. If they're really, you know, math averse, I could see this being a little bit of suffering. But otherwise, excellent game. Next, I got to play Tapestry. So Tapestry is the follow-up to Wingspan from Stonemaier Games. It is not the same designer. This one is designed by Jamie Stegmaier himself. And Tapestry heralds itself as a beautiful production civilization game. So, what's happening in Tapestry? So in Tapestry, basically, it's a four-page rulebook. It's pretty straightforward in terms of what you're doing, but the game plays out a lot more. We were not 3 hours, but 2.5, and maybe not quite that with Teach, with four players. So you're running like a two-hour game. You'll shave a little in terms of learning icons, but you're definitely running up there towards 2 hours to play this game. It's a thinky game. So in Tapestry, you are representing civilizations, and you all kind of start in a corner of the board, and then you take actions to spread your influence and your power and update your civilization. Upgrade, increase technology, all those kind of things. So what do you do? So on your turn, it's really simple. You have resources, you pay out resources to move up on tracks. There's a science track, there's a military track, there's an exploration track, and there's a technology track. When you move up on the tracks, there's various things. You get to draw tapestry cards, which are these cards you get to play once per game for some big effect. You get to draw tiles or place tiles out on the board to explore and gain more resources. Roll the dice to gain random resources and points. You get to move up on the military track to conquer new lands. You get to move up on the science track for kind of some random things. You can roll a die to move up on any track or gain different things. You get to build buildings into your civilization. So there's little tiny huts and cottages and town buildings that you can add. And there's these giant kind of milestone type buildings that are out that cover a bigger space. And you've got a capital with a whole bunch. It almost looks like a Sudoku grid. And you fill it in and you try to complete lines and complete boxes to get resources. So it's very Eurocentric. From the reviews I've heard, that's been the biggest negative, that the theme doesn't come through. And it doesn't. However, I don't think it's terrible. You know, it's thematic in the way that many classic Euros are thematic. And it's not like when I move up on the science track, I don't do something scientific. And when I move up on the exploration track, it's not like I don't do something exploratory. I absolutely do. And so I think from that end, it is thematic. It's just not very interesting. I think of something like Through the Ages, where when you draft buildings, they're just generally gaining you things, but it makes sense. Oh, this building is going to bring happiness and culture because it's movies, and that's what movies do to our culture. This character in the game, this leader, is going to kind of do something related to what they do, or what they did, excuse me, in the history of the world. So I think that element... I think that element leads to that. So the game is not very thematic, but it is very fun. The mechanisms you're doing and the build and all the things you're gaining, it is pretty much an engine builder. You're just doing more and more and more. Now, eventually you run out of resources and you have to take a gain resources action. I'm sorry, I don't know the name of it, but you move to the next era, right? So you're in the fire era and then the stone age and the bronze age and the Iron Age. I'm not sure on all those exactly in terms of that. I should know them, so I feel kind of silly for not. So you move through those ages, and you get new resources back, and you can play those tapestry cards and other things. I'm not giving you all the details of the game, so it's definitely like that's the basic idea. And then there's a smattering of icons and other little gotchas in the game and whatnot. But I think all in all, it works pretty well. Probably the biggest complaint people are going to have is going to be the theme. And the second one's going to be the downtime. So as turns go on, they get longer and longer, and this triggers this, which triggers this, and you have special abilities that you're trying to do. So I was the isolationist. So I want to keep people away from me and gather a whole bunch of territory, and do I want to trigger this special ability? Mine was pretty straightforward. When I take over territory, place a cube, nobody else can go there, get a resource, and try to build a big network of spots. That was pretty straightforward. But other people had, like, push your luck, roll the dice, and start up on the board, and go backwards, and all this kind of chaos in terms of what's happening. So I think the biggest detractor is going to be that downtime. It didn't bother me. I found in a four-player game that I'd finish my turn, it would take me about two players' turns to think through what I wanted to do, and then I would just have the player to my right who is taking their turn when I'm just waiting to take my turn. And, I mean, they might take a three-minute turn, and then I took mine. So it didn't bother me. I wasn't sitting there going, oh, my gosh, the downtime. But if you don't like games with downtime, this game will bother you. If you either make your decisions quickly or don't make your decisions till your turn, which you don't have to do too much of. The interaction is very low in this game. Is it medium? It's pretty low. It's drafting things. It's eventually you can run into each other. Yeah. I guess it's medium. So you could definitely plan your turn on other players' turns and be ready to go. But, you know, if you want a really snappy game, if you just don't want a two-hour game because it's 30 minutes per player, so you're playing a half hour and they're playing an hour and a half of it, it's not going to be your game. It's definitely not going to be there. So cost-wise, I mean, production-wise, it's beautiful. Cost-wise, it's tricky. I really would much prefer a model that was a cheaper game that could be upgraded for me personally in terms of buying the game. But there's no doubt, if you play this game, you will most likely like it. Most people will like this game is a much better way of saying that. You may not particularly like the game. And you'll be happy to have upgraded components for it. It's just a matter of whether that's a cost. So you really have to decide if this is disposable income, a luxury item. Then I think it's fine to pay that. Which all games should be your disposable income, don't get me wrong. But, you know, but if it's really weighing out two games for their gameplay alone, I could see going with a cheaper game on that front. So that's definitely going to be an element. But I really did like Tapestry. I'm excited to get a copy or play another copy. Hopefully this will be around at VonnerCon and at the Extra Life game and teach this game to people. I really want to try it two-player with Kathy. We play Through the Ages like crazy on the app. We're going to play Civilization very soon and hopefully Tapestry as well. So that is Tapestry from Stonemaier Games. I definitely liked the game. Not one of my favorites of the year, but it was still really, really fun. I liked the engine build. I liked the resource conversion and all those kind of things. So give it a thumbs up. Awesome. I'm going to take a little pause here and come back at it. So. Okay, everybody, I'm back, and I want to talk to you about Amul, which is, I think, one of my favorite games from this year, and it's published by Stronghold Games. So Amul is a card drafting, tableau building card game about trading and civilization, I guess really trading. Stop me if you've heard this before. but yes, it's very Seven Wonders-esque, or any of those types of games. But it's actually almost the opposite of Seven Wonders. I first heard about this from Paul Grogan. Actually, I saw it at Gen Con and a few other places. But Paul Grogan from Gaming Rules is the one who kind of turned me on to the game, saying he thought it was a hidden gem of the year. And I would agree. So what's happening in Amul is you have a hand of cards. And you are traders. I believe there's Arabs and Mongols. So you're actually in the Mideast region there. And on your turn, you're going to draw a card off the stack, and then everybody's going to pick a card face down, put it in the center of the table, and flip theirs over, and you're going to add a few cards from the deck to it based on player count. Plays 3 to 8 players, by the way. Then you're going to go around the room with a person with the first pick, and they're going to get to draft a card from the center to put in their hand. Once everybody drafts, then everybody will pick a card from their hand, put it face down, reveal simultaneously, and all those cards will come into play. If any have effects, then they will go off. You'll do that 9 times over 9 rounds, and then at the end of the game, you take your hand and you lay it down on the table, and any cards that say these can score if they're in your hand will score, any that have to be on the table to score are discarded, and your tableau is basically your hand plus your tableau, and you score a myriad of points, including most symbols of each Arab and Mongol for points amongst everybody. That's the game. Very similar to a lot of games that you've heard of, but really, like I said, it's almost the opposite of Seven Wonders, because you have a lot of control over the cards in your hand and what you're getting rid of and what you're playing and what you're drafting, as opposed to Seven Wonders, where you're kind of like, boy, there's some great cards in this hand. I'm going to take this one, and I'm never going to see that card again. You get to kind of hold on to the great cards. But at the same time, it's tricky because you have to decide, what am I going to hold on to and make space for? And I got to make sure I have cards in my hand at the end of the game that score, or can I have enough from just my tableau in terms of what's happening? There's also a market. Nope, the market are the cards that come out. There's also a bazaar and a palace region with some cards laid out. that could be drafted by other cards as well. The first pick goes around the table with whatever number of players. So, like, if you play with six players, it'll go all the way around the table. And then there's actually, like, military cards. And whoever has the most military will go first. And it kind of goes in military order. And they're all lettered A through H. And those break ties. So that's it. That's what's happening. But it's all in that card work. It's all in that card play. Do I think it replaces Seven Wonders? I mean, currently, yes. But I think it's really easy to play a game and be like, oh, this replaces this classic game that everybody's playing, in my mind. Because I think if I went back to play Seven Wonders, which I haven't in 2 years, probably, I would be like, oh, okay, Seven Wonders is rarely good, too. And obviously, Seven Wonders has all the expansions and other things that this doesn't have. There's actually a little expansion in there, and you shuffle the deck based on player count. You put more cards in, which is a little bit of a pain, but that's all that's in there, is just a bunch of cards with player count numbers on them and a board. There's no tokens. It's just a pad and a pen to write down all your points, and you figure out what you score and go from there. So that's the game, but it has been really fun. I just really like making those decisions and trying to figure out what should I keep, what should I play, what am I going to do? The game is winding down. I have to make good decisions. You see new cards, and it makes you go, ooh, maybe I can work with that card, right? And whatnot. Probably, like, one of my only complaints about the game is you're tracking all those symbols that everybody has, and counting around a table of 6, 7, 8 people is tricky, so that can be a little frustrating. Everybody tell me how many of these symbols. Everybody tell me how many of these symbols. So, but it's not really a big deal, you know, in terms of all of that. I think it's fine to just have to, you know, track that and figure out what symbols are there and whatnot. But yeah, I'm really, really liking this game. I like the player count. I'm slightly sad it doesn't play with two. I'm sure somebody will make a variant, but I mean, card drafting games with two players are tough. In terms of all that, I imagine you could try it, but I think it's fine. There's so many great two-player games that I could just play this when I have three or more players. I think I'm a couple plays in, trying to think of what player counts I've played at. 8 and 6 and 4? Did I play 8? I don't know if I've played 8 yet. Anyway, so a bunch of plays there, and it's all the same. There are cards that interact with your neighbors, actually camels that interact with the whole table. That endgame scoring interacts with the whole table. There's scoring cards that interact with your neighbors, so you're trying to track what they're drawing. So again, that's kind of low-level interaction, but you have to at least pay attention to two people and what they're playing in terms of all that, whatnot. And another part I like is, because you change the deck, it scales perfectly. Because whatever the player count is, it'll scale to that player count because you put exactly a number of cards. So every single card comes out every single game. Really well done. Really like this game. It's a $40 price point, which is great for what you're getting here. And so I highly recommend Amul from Stronghold Games. My top 10 is going to be interesting this year because I've had a lot of games that I really enjoy in a year when people are saying, there's not a lot of good. And I agree that there hasn't been, like, stellar games this year. You know, games that will break, you know, into the top 10 of all time or BGG or any of that. But, man, there's some really good games or really fun alternatives. Now, I can appreciate somebody wanting a smaller shelf and not having Seven Wonders and Amul stacked up when they could just pick one over the other. And in that case, I can't necessarily tell you. I feel like Seven Wonders probably has better staying power and more expansions and things that people would be more interested in it. But man, I could just play those back to back, Seven Wonders followed by Amul, and that'd be a great day to me. So that's where I am at. All right, let me talk about Copenhagen. So Copenhagen is a card drafting tile laying game. A nice, easy gateway style game. You're building up the city of Copenhagen, which is right across the way in Denmark from Sweden, which is my native... No, it's not my native country. It's my heritage. I am from America. But we are Swedish. My dad is the first one born in America. So there's that. All right. So in Copenhagen, you are drafting cards from the center. You have to take adjacent cards. There's 7 cards lined up, but the 2 on the end aren't adjacent to each other. So you're drafting pairs of cards, and they're just colors. There's like 5 colors in the game. And then you're playing sets of cards, like 2 to 5, in order to pick up polyominoes and then lay them on your board, basically Tetris style, so they don't have to fall from the sky, they have to touch another tile, etc., etc. You're trying to complete rows. You score a point for that. Unless you have all windows, then you'll score 2 points for that. You're trying to complete columns, which are taller. you'll score 2 points for that, all windows 4 points. And then you're trying to cover these shields or complete rows where there are shields, and those will give you bonuses. So the bonuses are you can draft these new little abilities that might say draft 3 cards instead of 2 on your turn, or take a double turn where you draft cards and play a tile, or you need 1 less card to play a tile, things like that. You know, pretty typical things that we've seen before, and other things. Or you can flip all of your tiles so that you can use them again, and so you're kind of working your way through. And it's a race game. You're trying to get to 12 points. You go through the deck twice. If that happens, then you will discard cards. Discard cards? No. Then you will end the game, and whoever has the most points will win. That was weird. I don't know where that came from in my brain. So I was making a left-hand turn, and that must have confused me a little bit. So that's the idea with happening with the game. So that kind of makes it play itself out in terms of length of time and whatnot. It's a really interesting game. It's a nice little light gateway game. You could definitely teach people with this. I'd say it's even lighter than Ticket to Ride, plays shorter than Ticket to Ride. And it's gone over well. You can see there's strategy there and what you're choosing. It's fun. I'm not a huge polyominoes person, but this was fun. Like, these polyominoes made sense and what I was trying to do, and kind of like racing other players, I was able to build like a tall column of all windows, and it was fun to see that pay off and be worth it and trigger other abilities, which is what you want to do. So I really enjoyed Copenhagen. I thought it was nice. I thought it was a great game for teaching other people and whatnot. Is it a gamer's game? It's not really, but there's enough strategy there that definitely makes it interesting in terms of all that. So kind of a short review, but like Copenhagen from Queen Games. All right, let's see what's next on the list here. Last up, I'm going to talk to you about Walking in Burano. Walking in Burano is a game from AEG Games. It was originally published by Emperor S4, I believe is the name of the company. And Walking in Burano is a card drafting, card laying, so they're almost like tiles, game in which you are trying to build houses in Burano, which is famous for its various colored houses and whatnot that it has. So what you do on a turn is you lay out a whole bunch of houses, and there are 3 levels. So you have the base level, the middle level, and the top level. You lay all those out. They're various different colors with all sorts of different pictures on them. And then you have visitors and inhabitants that are off to the side. On your turn, you can draft from a single column. You can take 1, 2, or 3 cards. And for every card you don't take, you get a coin. So that can be kind of part of your strategy of what you're doing there in terms of taking those coins to be able to do things. And then after you do that, you get to pay. You pay a coin to play a card. And for every additional card you want to play, you can pay 2 more coins, up to a total of 5 coins and 3 cards that you can lay. On your turn, you're trying to build these houses. So you need to build the bottom layer, the second layer, and then the third layer, although you have some scaffolding, so you can break those rules ever so slightly. So that's an element of what you can do, as well as you can choose the number of cards you play, and you're trying to stack them so that you have houses that are all the same color. So I want to have an all orange house, all blue house, and then you can't put 2 houses of the same color next to each other. You do have these little tokens that are worth 3 points at the end of the game, but you can spend them if you want to break those rules. So if I want to build a house that's blue and yellow, I can break the rules and get rid of 3 points for the end of the game. And then the big thing you're trying to do is, once you complete a house, build all 3 of those, you get to either take an inhabitant or a visitor, and those will tell you how they score based on the card. And there's all sorts of things. There's cats, and there's flowers, and there's chimneys, and there's other symbols, there's people, and there's building, like all varieties of things that are happening. At the end of the round, you then shift all the cards down, so they'll start to be different sets, and add new cards and pass the player token. You keep going until one player builds 5 buildings. Once they've built 5 houses, that will trigger the end of the game. Everybody will add up their points, including those 3-point tiles, the points from all your inhabitants and visitors. Some cards give you points on them, some of the buildings. And then there are open and closed windows. Actually, open windows don't do anything. But closed windows, whoever has the most loses that many points. So if I have 7 closed windows, I will lose 7 points. And that's the idea. Oh, sorry, only the person with the most. So if I have 4 closed windows and you have 7, you lose 7, I lose none. So that's kind of a key element of the game. Again, it's a great, simple game. There's just so many of these this year. I can see not filling a shelf in terms of purchasing with all of these games, but man, playing them is a blast. This game's really good. It's really beautiful with all the colors. The think is just right there, right? It's simple enough that you can understand what's going on, but complex enough to make decisions and make you go, oh gosh, I don't know what to do. Oh, is that a good decision? Maybe I'll change my mind. Wait, can I take that back? Right? All that kind of stuff that you're doing because the decision is really good. It's really tight. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, I got to build this so I can get this out. You can draft a whole bunch of cards, but then you got to play them all. It does also limit your coins in your cards, so you can't like hoard one of those and then just have like mega turns. In terms of that, so it's always a smart element to keep people kind of moving along and make decisions in the now. It makes it more tactical than strategic, but I think that's good because that adds that element where you can't plan out the perfect building. You're just trying to make one with what you have. But yeah, all in all, it's a nice production. I mean, the cards are really pretty. It's clear as to what's happening. They've got a good player aid in there to help you with what all the symbols mean and what's going on. So I really enjoyed it. Played it at 2 and 3 so far, so I have to see, but I mean, they're pretty fast turns in terms of what you're drafting, even though you're thinking, right? It's one of those games where you don't realize you're thinking, you feel like you're thinking a whole bunch, but it's probably 45 seconds or something when you actually take a turn. It's not a big deal. Yeah, really fun game, Walking in Burano from AEG. All right, with that, I think I will wrap up this episode. So thanks so much. That's a whole bunch of reviews for you. Shikoku, Tapestry, Irish Gauge, Amul, and Copenhagen, and Walking in Burano. There's more games to come, more excitement to happen, more to get my hands on. I am excited. I'm really excited for Marvel Champions. That's probably my most anticipated game right now. See if that can crack into the top 10 games of the year with the other 25 games that I have for the top 10 games of the year. So, well, I guess that's it for this episode of the Portal Game Podcast, episode number 137. I am your host, The Brant, and until next time, I hope you step into the portal.